Okay, we're beginning here on the bottom of Lamed Daled Amud Bet, four lines from the bottom. Here the Gemara is discussing the machloka between Rabbi Abbahu and Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Abbahu told us that in the case of Ma'avir and Mechabel, that even in cases where they are completely destructive in nature, nevertheless one is chayav the Gabei Shabbat, the Melachot of Shabbat, for those Melachot. On the other hand, Rabbi Yochanan required that there be some sort of constructive aspect of Chovel and Mavir, and therefore he requires that it's Bechovel, Tzarech LeKalbo, Mavir, Tzarech LeAfro. Now the Gemara brings a question from our Mishnah. Tnan, Sharosh Diket Agadish B'Shabbat, a case where a shor lights the piles on fire on Shabbat, Chayav, then you are responsible for those actions of the shor. Behu, Shidik etesh gadish b'Shabbat patur. On the other hand, if the individual himself lit the gadish on fire on Shabbat, he would be patur because of the fact that he is now chayav b'nafsho, that he is subject to the death penalty for the violation of the Shabbat, and for that reason, he'd be patur for the monetary compensation that would come from the burning of the gadish. Bintane hu dumyu d'shoro. The fact that the Mishnah is contrasting him versus his shor tells you that the cases by him and the shor should be of a similar nature, which is that he is similar to his shor. Mashoro delo kabayle, avunami delo kabayle. Just like by his shor, it's a case where he has no intention for the outcome or the result of what he is doing, and that he doesn't need to burn down this gadish. So too, by him, it's also a case where he doesn't need to, or it's not necessary for him to do this burning. And yet it still says there, patur, that you are patur in that instance because your life is on the line, or in other words, you're going to be penalized for violating the Shabbat. But here you have a case which compares the shor and the owner of the shor to their actions. And in this action, we say that when the shor does it, you're responsible for the monetary damage that is done. Yet the individual himself is patur for the monetary damage because he's chayav for the melachot of Shabbat. And if I compare the shor and the adam together, that means, or what we're assuming here, is that there was an intent for a specific outcome or a specific necessity for the burning that is being done here. That is similar to what Rabbi Abbahu says, is that I don't need any constructive nature to this malacha in order to be chayav on Shabbat for violating the malachot of Shabbat. And that's what we see here as well. Tosafot spoke about this at the end of yesterday's daf, whether even according to Rabbi Abbahu you need some form of cause or reason that he's doing it, not simply that he is just doing it or he has no reason at all, because then it might become a malacha shein tzricha l'gufa, that we discussed at the end of yesterday's daf, but not to the level of which Rabbi Yochanan requires that there be a specific purpose or intent in what you're doing over here. And that's what Rabbi Yochanan had said, that the case is Mavir v'tzarech laf afro. It's only a case when you burn it down because you specifically need the ashes. Over here in our Mishnah does not seem to indicate that you need anything of that sort. So the Gemara says, no, shoro dumia didei. You got it backwards. It's not him like his shor, but rather his shor like him. Mahu dekabayilei. Just like by him, it's necessary, or he's doing it for a particular purpose, so too his shor is also doing it for a particular purpose. What exactly is the case by shor, where the shor specifically needs the outcome or the result of these actions? Talking about a really smart shor, he has a bite on his back, gives some sort of injury bite that is on the back of the animal, and he wants to put ashes or coals on that wound, and he will roll around in the ashes or the coals in order to facilitate that. Amar says, Manaya Dinan, how do we know that's really what his intent is, that he's trying to burn the thing down in order to get to the ashes? Because that's exactly what he does. Right after he burns it down, he takes a roll up in the ashes to help to facilitate the healing of the wound. Is there such a thing where a shor is so smart that he's going to burn down a gadish to create the ashes or the coals that he can roll in it in order to provide himself a cure? It says, yes, that is the case. There was a shor that was in the house of Rav Papa, that he had pains in his teeth or in his gums, Ayol upatke the nizaita. It went ahead and knocked off the cover or the top of the barrel. Veshati shichra, and it drank the beer. Vitze, and it was cured from that pain. Rav Papa happened to be a beer maker, and the shore there had pains in its teeth, and it knew that if it drank the beer, that would solve the problem, because the alcohol from the beer would both numb the gums or the teeth area, as well as probably sterilize the area, and would be beneficial to it. So in order to get to the beer, it goes ahead and knocks the cover off the top of the barrels, and it goes ahead to drink it. So here you have a shore who knows what it wants. It knows what the solution is, and then it goes ahead and takes care of itself and does that. So obviously, these aren't thinking animals. They're just their instincts cause them or drive them to do these things. And the same thing by the ashes. If he knows that the ashes or the hot coals will provide some sort of relief for the wound on his back, he might know that if he puts a coal down on this gadish, that will create the coals or the ashes that he's looking for. And therefore, instinctively, he will do such a thing. So here we do have a case, or we do have a situation in which the shore needs the outcome or wants the outcome. If that's the case, then our situation in the Mishnah would be a case where the shore is similar to the individual. For Rabbi Yochanan, the individual requires a constructive necessity for the malacha in order to be chayav, as he wants the afar, he wants the ashes. And we can simulate to have a similar case by the shore, which is similar to the Adam. Amar Rabbanan, Kamed Rapapa, Mi Matzitamar, Shoro Dumya Didei. Can't you really say that the structure of the Mishnah is his shore similar to himself? Bahtani, the Mishnah says, Shoro Shibiesh Patur. That the case of a shore where he embarrasses someone, they're Patur. Bahu Shibiesh, on the other hand, if he himself embarrasses someone, Chayav. He is responsible. That we saw yesterday because not only by Busha, but by any of the Arba Advarim, we know that Adam is Chayav for the Dalad Dvarim, but the shore an animal is Patur. And of course, an animal is Patur from causing Busha, because animals don't have the intent to be Chayav in Boshet. So Shoro Dumne Diye, if you're going to say over here that it's a shore similar to him, it's Kavin Levayesh, Hechemishkakadah. How are you going to have a similar case where the shore does exactly what he does? Here, he intends to embarrass the victim, and therefore he's chayav for the bullshit that is caused. So now, what are you going to say? You have a shore that intends to create busha, embarrassment to the victim? That doesn't work. A shore can never have intent to embarrass the victim, because shvarim in general don't have intent, especially for something intangible like busha. Where it says, no, kagon shididkaven lahazik, the case where he intends to do damage. Adam Amar, we saw this earlier back in Daf Chav Zayin, Nitkavin Lazik, if you have intent to do damage, av opposed to lo nitkavin the bayesh. Even though you had no intent to do the busha, there you are, chayav for the busha. So you don't need intent in terms of intent to embarrass in order to be chayav. You simply need intent to do damage in order to be chayav for the boshet. And that we can create. That we can say that a person who has intent to do damage will then be chayav, or responsible for the boshet, the embarrassment that is an outcome of that intent to do damage. And you could say the similar thing, that a shor is similar to Adam in that way, that a shor has kavanato lahazik, because that is the trait, or one of the traits of a shor, the karen of a shor, is that he has kavanato lahazik. So that would be the similar case, the shor dumya l'adam, that the shor is kavanato lahazik, just like the Adam is kavanato lahazik. In that case, the Adam will be chayav for the boshet. On the other hand, the shore that does that, the owner will not be responsible for the boshet that is the outcome. So we can, in the end, explain this Mishnah, Aliba de Rabbi Yochanan, even though the Mishnah seemingly is a problem for Rabbi Yochanan, because here we have a case where someone's burning down a gadish, and they are chayav for the malachot and shavat, and that's what makes them patur for the tashlumim. Nevertheless, we explain that the Mishnah is talking about a case where there was a constructive purpose or intent to the burning. And even though that means that the animal is also doing it for a constructive intent and purpose, we explained that we showed how in each of the cases that is true, that he's doing exactly what the human is doing. In the case of burning down the gadish, he's burning it down for his own benefit or for the medical cure that would come out of it. In the case of busha, we don't need you to have intent for busha in order to be chayav. We simply need you to have intent for nezek that the animal can have, just like the human being has. And so therefore we can create the cases or scenarios in the Mishnah, which make it possible to explain the Mishnah according to Rabbi Yochanan. Rav Amar, Rava gives an alternative to the explanation of why, by the case of burning down the Gadish on Shabbat, that you are chayav, quote-unquote, mita, and therefore you are patur from the Tashlumim, is the case b'shogeg, the case where he did it unintentionally. Ucha de Tana de Beit Chizkia, similar or from the rule of Tana de Beit Chizkia. Now, the way that this is explained is the Machloket Rashi and the Tosafot, Rashi and many of the other Rishonim. Rashi claims that when we say b'shogeg over here, we don't literally mean shogeg, we mean it's a case of burning without a constructive intent. Meaning, it's not a case where he needs the ashes in the end. And despite that fact, it still gives him a ptur from tashlumim. It still affords him an exemption from making payment. Why is that? Because of Tana de Beit Chizkia. Tana de Beit Chizkia says, and I will speak it out first, and then we'll read it inside, that when you are in violation of a malacha on Shabbat, even if you only violate that b'shogeg, it provides you with the same outcome as if you did it intentionally. If one did a malacha on Shabbat b'mezid, then they have kamlei d'rabbi minei, and that makes them patur from any compensation or outside monetary obligations because of the fact that they are chayav mita. That result of doing it b'mezid is also true when you do it b'shogeg. Someone does it unintentionally, violates the malachot on Shabbat, they are also protected by that from having to make payment or patur from payments. So what Rashi suggests is that just like by Tana de Beit Chizkia, who says that when you do it unintentionally b'shogeg, it's similar to doing it b'mezid, and therefore you're patur from tashlumim, Rashi says the same thing. Just like burning down an item for the Eber is the real malacha, and there you'd be patur from tashlumim. So too, when you burn it, even without the intent for the Eber that comes about from it, nevertheless, you'll be patur from the tashlumim. Tosafot already raises the issue as to why Rashi's explanation is very difficult, is because by the case of mezid and shogeg, over there you have a maaseh malacha. In both instances, you're doing the malacha. One case, you're doing the mezid intentionally. One case, you're doing the shogeg unintentionally. And that's enough to protect you or to stop you having to make compensation in that case. Because in both instances, you violated the malacha. Once intentionally and once unintentionally. And that's what provides you that protection or the ability not to have to pay in those instances. On the other hand, when you're talking about a case where he burns it down and he doesn't tzarich le'efro, that he doesn't need the afar, the efer that comes from it, over there he's not doing a ma'aseh malacha at all. He's not doing anything that is a malacha on Shabbat, according to Rabbi Yochanan. According to Rabbi Yochanan, the malacha only applies when you burn something for a specific intent. When you burn something without an intent, then in that case, you're not doing a malacha. It might be osur midrabanan because you're doing something that's mekalkal on Shabbat, it's patur valasur, but certainly not the malacha. And for that reason, Tosafot says that he doesn't see here being a patur or a protection from the fact that you did it or burnt it down without specific intent for the eifer. And therefore, the Balei Tosafot say that when Rambam says that our Mishnah is talking about shogeg, it means literally bishogeg. And that's the way that most of the Rishonim learn against what Rashi suggests over here. The Tana de Beit Chizkia, that's what Tana de Beit Chizkia explains to us. The Pasuk says, Make Adam Umake Behema. And it talks about in Sefer Vayikra, at the end of Parshat Emor, there it has a little piece about damages and killing that is done by a person, by animals. Over there it talks about the Make Adam and Make Behema, as if there is some sort of correlation or connection between the makeh of an Adam and the makeh of a behema. The Tana Beit Chizkia says, what does that mean? Ma makeh behema. Just like when a person injures a behema, lo chalakta ba ben shogeg, ben mezid, ben mitkavein, le shein mitkavein. It doesn't matter what he does it unintentionally, intentionally, ben mitkavein, shein mitkavein, ben derech yirida le derech aliyah, whether it's in a downward motion or upward motion, the potro mamon, elo lechaybo mamon, to tell you that in all those instances, you are responsible for the maket, the injury that is caused, or the damage that you do. Af maket adam. So too, when you hit a person, lo tachlok bo, ben shogeg lemezid, ben mitkaven, leshein mitkaven, ben derech yirida lederech aliyah. In all those instances, the halacha should be exactly the same, whether intentional or unintentional, whether in a downward motion, upward motion, the chayvo mamon, That case too, obligates you money, and will the patron mamon to tell you that you are patur for mamon. So the pasuk says, umake behema yishalmenu. One who hits an animal has to make compensation restitution. Umake adam yumat. The person who hits an individual will then be subject to the death penalty. So we're talking about here a case where he hits an individual to the point where he kills the individual. When he kills the individual, he's obviously not going to be chayav for compensation or damage and nezek that is done in that process. So what Tana Bechizkia teaches us is that no matter how that came about, the makeh adam, that still leads to an exemption for this individual from having to pay the nezek. And that means whether b'mezi they did it intentionally, whether they did it b'shogeg, in either of those instances, you will still have the result in which the person will not have to pay for the nezek because they killed this victim. And so what you see here is that when it comes to nezek, comes to doing damage, adam u'ad le'olam, and you're responsible for that damage, whether it's done intentionally or unintentionally. On the other hand, when it comes to the killing of an individual, you are chayav mita for that. Whether in reality you are punished by a death penalty or put into galut, none of those items matter in determining or deeming you as if you are a killer in that instance, and therefore that reason you'll be poter et hamamon, and you won't have to pay or make compensation for damage that is done. Based on this tana de Bechizkia, you see that there is no distinction when you're in violation of something that would result in a death penalty. It doesn't matter if you do it intentionally and you're chayav the mita, or you do it bishogeg, where you will not be chayav the mita, but had you done it b'menzid, you would have been chayav mita. That also is sufficient grounds to release you from having to make the monetary payments in that instance. So in that way, we can explain the Mishnah. So the Mishnah is a case of bishogeg, a case where he did it unintentionally, and that's how he is protected from the need or necessity to make payment. But in that way, it's easier to understand the comparison between the shor and the adam. Because before we said, you have a shor, you have an animal that is doing it with specific intent for the outcome. Well, now we don't even have to have a person doing it for the specific intent for the outcome. It unintentionally came about that way. He did it bishogeg for the malacha to get a result in that outcome. And so too, you can talk about a shor that does it in an unintentional manner and results in that outcome. And that's much easier to understand than talking about this really smart shor that is doing it in a way that simulates what you would think are human qualities in general, that they're trying to do it for a specific purpose. Can you really say that the Mishnah is talking about a case of shogeg? The Mishnah says the reason you're patur is because you're subject to the death penalty for doing the malacha. Well, you're only subject to a death penalty if you do it b'mezid. So the Gemara says, hachi kamar. Even the mezid nidon b'nafsho, since in a case where you do it intentionally, you will lose your life, echidami, and where's that case? Kon debay le'afro, in a case where you need the ashes that result from this fire, hashta b'shogeg, patur. In the case of shogeg, then you will be patur. So in a case where had you done it b'mezid, you would have resulted in a death penalty. In that case, when you do it b'shogeg, you are patur, it still protects you from the death penalty. But in explaining it this way, then it's a much easier scenario to come up with a similar case between where the Adam does it and the Shor does it, because now we're talking about unintentional. Unintentional, you could have the person do it unintentionally, but also could have the animal do it unintentionally and result in a case where it's a Rikhla Afro, where you need the Afar, you need the resultant items from the fire. So in that case, now it's easier to understand the Mishnah in that manner. And I'd have to come up with a case that we said before, that Rav Avya made a suggestion that we're talking about a shor pikeach. All right. Now, just to summarize, it's very interesting. The Balei Tosafot, the last Tosafot on the Amud here, says, now, begimel inyanei mamon ari tani de Bechizkia. Tani de Bechizkia is talking about three different scenarios in which it has impact what they're saying. Ben bishogeg, ben mezid. What's the case of shogeg versus mezid? Ari b'mamachon acher b'hademita. It's talking about when there's also damage that is done simultaneous with the death penalty that is incurred. B'nafgalan mino, and that we learn from that, d'chayve mito shogegim p'torim mita shlomim. That if you are chayav mita, quote-unquote, b'shogeg, then you are also exempt from that payment, that monetary payment, just like the case of mezid. So that's one item. That there is, And here, everybody holds of that position of Tana de Bechizkiya, because the Gemara in Ketubot actually says, is there anybody who doesn't hold of this position of Tana de Bechizkiya? Which is that when you have a problem bishogeg, or when you violate something bishogeg, it has the same results as violating a bimizid, which is that you will not be chayav for the monetary, incidental, or monetary obligations that came about because of that action. Then there's another statement of Tana Beit Chizkiya, ben mitkavein, leino mitkavein, that there's no difference between them. That, he says, is lav v'machon acher b'hademita ayri. It's not talking about where there's also other monetary obligations along with this death penalty that you're incurring. Demikal v'chomer mishogeg nafka, because that you could have learned out from a kal v'chomer shereg, ella, lafuke midrabi. It's coming to say that you're exempt from making payment for the monies of the one that is killed, meaning the value of the one who is killed. And this comes to exclude the position of Rabbi. The Dorish b'mitkavei narog etzeh, varag etzeh. Person intends to kill one person and results in killing another person. They're intending for A, but instead they kill B. V'natata nefesh tacha nefesh. Rabbi says, based on v'natata nefesh tacha nefesh, that's a case where you tried to kill A and instead killed B. And nefesh tacha nefesh means you pay mamon. You have to make compensation to the neherag in that case. If you did it intentionally, you are patur. So too, when you do it unintentionally, you are also patur. Or what Tana de Bechizkiya says is, it doesn't matter if the victim is your intended victim versus if it's the unintended victim. In neither of those cases, you have to make monetary compensation. And so that's the second din that Tana de Bechizkiya tells us. There's no difference between mitkavein and she'enu mitkavein. Meaning that there is no difference as to the intended victim. As long as you were intending to kill and you end up killing, none of those cases do you have to make compensation. On the other hand, Rabbi believes that if you intended for one victim and then you killed the other victim, that you have to pay mamon, you have to make compensation for that. And Tana Beit Chizkiya was saying that that's not true. The last thing that he says, which is, v'kamash malon uben derech yirida, the final statement of Tana de Beit Chizkiya is it makes no difference whether they do it in an upward motion or a downward motion. Now, the easiest way, or the simplest way to read that is that, we'll learn this in the Gemara in Makot, which is that in order to be chayav to go to Galut, it has to be done in a downward motion. That means, for instance, if you're chopping wood, the only time that you'd be chayav to go into Galut is on the downward motion of chopping the wood, that the head of the axe went flying off, or a splinter came loose from the wood that you're chopping and then killed someone. In that instance, the individual would be chayav galut. Now then, if on his way up, meaning that he's lifting the axe to bring it down, and on the way up, the head of the axe goes flying off and then kills, in that case, you're not subject to galut. The same thing has to do with ascending and descending a ladder. If a person is descending a ladder and then falls on an individual and kills them, then they're chayav galut, if it's mishogeg. If they're ascending the ladder and they fall, they will not be subject to galut, they will not go into galut. So the simplest understanding of Tana de Beit Chizkiya is that ben b'derech aliyah, ben derech yiridah, doesn't matter which way this killing happened, that shogeg will exempt you from having to make payment that comes along with it. Those of it over here offers an alternative as to what that means, derech aliyah velo derech yiridah, which is, kamo de derech aliyah lo nitein shkagato lekapara. Just like when it's an upward motion, you do not get the benefit of going into galut, which would provide you the kapara. Delo shaklina minei mamona lemifterei. And over there, we don't take monetary compensation to exempt him from that kapara. Hachanami derech yiridato. Afa giav shenitna shkagato lekapara. Even though over there he does have kapara and he does go into galut for that, also in that case, when it's done derech yiridah, you do not make compensation, or you do not have to make compensation in that case, because it, even though it has the possibility of kapara, it still doesn't allow you or obligate you to make monetary payments in that case. And then he says, v'yesh toim, and there's some that make the mistake to explain derech aliyah and derech yiridah the way that I explained before, which would have been the simplest way, domar, to liftor shogeg derech aliyah kamo derech yiridah, itzrich. It's coming to teach you, just like by derech aliyah and derech yiridah, even though there is no galut in one of those cases, on the Derech Aliyah, you'd still be patur from the Tashlamim. But that is, he says, not the real limud that comes out of Tana B'Chizkiyah, but rather the exemption from having to make monetary compensation, even in a place where the shogeg is afforded kapara. Nevertheless, you're patur from having to make compensation in that case, even if it's b'mezid, because lo nitan the kapara, even though it's nitan the kapara, even though there is a atonement that can be attained here, nevertheless, it still does not obligate you in the compensation, the monetary compensation. So that's how Tosfot says that there are three different dinim that come out of this Tana Debei Chizkia. Okay, now we move on to the next Mishnah. Shor Shaya Rudeif Achar Shor Acher. There was a shore running after another shore. Vihuzak, and it was damaged. Meaning the shore that is being chased was damaged. Of course, if the shore that is chasing is damaged, it's obviously not the problem of the shore that is being victimized by the one that's chasing it, because he caused it to himself by chasing after the other shore. We're talking about here where the victim, the shore that's being chased, actually got damaged. Zeomer shorcha hezi, zeomer lo kiela besela laka. So the owner of the shore that was injured says that the other shore did the damage, and he was chasing after him, and in his chasing after him, he ended up hurting him, goring him, or doing something to hurt this shore. On the other hand, the owner of the shore that was doing the chasing says, no, your shore got hurt because it bumped into a rock, or it slipped on a rock, and it injured itself. Now here, there's a major machloket in the Rishonim as to how by itself it has to be. There's some Rishonim who believe over here that if the injury happens because the shore is running away from the, call it the bullying shore, in that case, he would still be responsible for the damage that is done, because the whole cause of the damage was because this bullying shore was chasing him and then he got hurt. And so therefore, the owner of the shore that was doing the bullying would be responsible for that. And over here, we say bisela laka means a case where he actually was scratching himself, trying to do something, and slipped or got hurt by the rock, totally independent of the chase that's going on. The other Rishonim believe that even if it was part of this chase and the bullying shore was chasing him and the other shore hit himself on a rock or slipped on a rock because he was being chased, still the owner of the shore that's doing the bullying is patur, because that's groma. It wasn't a direct result of the other shore doing damage to him. It's an indirect result of him chasing him, and then this incidental damage happens, and therefore the bullying shore is not chayav for that. So whatever the case may be, the argument is, who's responsible for the damage to this shore? Is it the chasing shore, the bullying shore, or is it that it did it to itself? And obviously, each party is making the claim that's to its benefit. Hamotzi michavero alav araya. Whoever here wants to extract payment has the burden of proof upon them, and that means that the shore that is injured, the owner of the shore that is injured, has the burden of proof to show that his shore was really injured by the shore that was doing the chasing. You have two oxen that are chasing down one ox. Each one of them says it was the other bullying shore that did the damage. They are both patur, because again, there's no proof that you can say that one shore over the other shore did the damage over here. If they both belong to a single owner, then they are both chayav, or we know between the two of them, they're definitely obligated to make payment or compensation over here, because one of the two of them did the damage, and since they're owned by a similar owner, it's his possession that did the damage. We're not certain as to which one, but one of them definitely did the damage. When there are two owners, they can both pawn off the problem on the other owner, saying that you did it. And the other guy says, you did it. And again, here, there is no proof. And since there's no proof, we can't obligate either party without evidence that they are the responsible party for the damage that is done here. Echad gadol vechad katan. So you have one big shore and one small shore. Anizak omer gadol hezik, the owner of the victimized shore, says it was the bigger ox that attacked his animal. Vamazik omer, and the owner of the bullying shvarim over here says, lo, kela katanizik. It was the smaller of the two that did the damage. Why does that matter? It matters because over here we're talking about a short tom that pays me gufo, that pays out of his monetary value. And that means that his chasinezek is kept out, or the liability is kept out at the value of the shore that is doing the damage. So if it's the shore gadol, then he's going to have to pay the full chatzinezek. If it's the shore katan that did the damage, then the Shor Katan doesn't have sufficient value to get up to the Chatzi Nezek, and the Mazik will be capped out at the value of that Shor. So the Mazik has a vested interest in saying that it is the Katan that did the damage, whereas the Nizak, the owner of the victimized Shor, has a vested interest in saying that it's the Gadol, because in that way he'll get full compensation of the Chatzi Nezek. Echad Tam v'Echad Mu'at. Of the attacking Shvarim, there's two possibilities. One is a Tam, and one is a Mu'at. Hanizak Omer Mu'at Ezik. The owner of the victimized Shor says it was the Mu'at that attacked, because in that way he'll get full Nezek paid. But Mazik Omer, the owner of the Shvarim that did the damage, says, Lo, Elokele Tam Chazik. He says, no, it was the Tam that did damage, you're only entitled to Chatzi Nezek over here. In all of these instances, Amotzi Michavero Alav Araya. The burden of proof is on the individual who's trying to get or extract compensation. That means it's the owner of the victimized Shor has got to bring proof here in order to make collection, whether it's Nezek Shalem, whether it's from the Gadol instead of the Katan. In all of these instances, he's got to bring proof. The burden of proof is on him. Ha'ilan Nizakim Shnaim. If the victimized Shvarim are two, Echad Gadol v'Echad Katan, V'amazikin also Shnaim are two, Echad Gadol v'Echad Katan. So you have two bullying Shvarim over here, and two Shvarim that were injured. And both of them, in both the instances, the bullying Shvarim, one's big and one's small, and the victimized Shvarim are also one big and one small. Hanizak Omer, the owner of the Shvarim that were victimized, says, Gadol Hizik Eta Gadol, Bekatan Eta Katan. Again, his best outcome is if we say that the larger of the two Shvarim damaged the larger Shor, and the smaller of the two Shvarim damaged the smaller Shor, because in that way, if you're paying him as a tam for Chatzi Nezek, the gufo of the bigger one will be responsible for the damage done to the bigger one, which likely will be a larger sum. And the smaller one will be responsible for the damage done to the smaller one. He says, no, it's the small one injured the big one, and the big one injured the small one. Because in that way, he will have to pay Chatzi Nezek, the full Chatzi Nezek for the small one. But on the larger one that is damaged, you only have to pay up to the value of the smaller shore that did that damage. Echad tam v'echad mu'ad. One that's a tam and one's a mu'ad. And here again, they're doing damage to the two different shvarim. Nizak omer mu'ad ezikat gadol. The one that was mu'ad damaged the bigger one, so that way he gets full nezek for the larger damage. The tam et katan. And the one that was domesticated is damaged the katan, where he'll get chatzi nezek. But mazik omer was just the opposite. Though ekele tam et gadol. The more domesticated one, the one that was not a goring ox, hit the gadol, we're off to pay chatzi nezek. Mu'ad et katan. And the one that was mu'ad damaged the katan, we're off to pay full nezek. Again, motzi michavero alav haraya. In this case as well, we say that the burden of proof is on the one who's trying to extract money, or say that the scenario is a scenario in which he'll get more money or more compensation, and that means the burden of proof is on the nizak, the owner of the victimized shvarim over here. Tosfot, we'll see it later on, explains the different section of the Mishnah based on the Gemara, which we're going to see in a second, that there's a Chiddush in each section of the Mishnah that comes to tell us a din that we wouldn't have otherwise assumed or known. And the first of which is Amar Rav Chiya Bava, Zot Omeret. This tells us, Chalukim Alav Chavirav Al Sumchus. Our Mishnah shows you that the peers of Sumchus disagree with his principle. Damar Mamona Mutal B'Safek Chalukim. That whenever you have money that is bisafek, you split it. I mean that if we have doubt, we have uncertainty as to what the scenario is, we split the difference, and each party will get half of the benefit or half of the loss that is associated. So in our cases over here, for instance, if we're not sure if it was a muad or a tam that did it, then they will get the 75% of the damage would be paid in that case, because we're not sure if it should be 50% of the damage or 100% of the damage. So therefore, the owner of the shvarim that did the damage will pay 75%, because that will make it a mamon, and we'll talk about a fake chokim. Now, as the Gemara in Baba Metzia already discusses, Tosafot quotes this, he doesn't mention it directly, but that's what he's referring to, and the Gemara in Baba Metzia says that Sumchus's din only applies when there's what's called a drura de mamona, when there is some sort of factor that makes it, would cause us to determine that you should split the difference over here. What they're trying to prevent, or what they're trying to stop, is a scenario in which someone comes along and says, that's mine. Now, if they can make that up, they can make up a story and say, that's mine. They come debate it. The real owner of the object doesn't have sufficient proof or documentation of his item. And also now he's finding himself splitting the item with somebody else who made up a claim. So we don't want that scenario to come up and say that Mamona Mutalba Safek is split in every scenario where there's uncertainty, because then people will make a business out of this, and they'll basically try to figure out where people don't have good claims or strong evidence of their ownership, and then they'll just make up a claim against them, and then it'll be split between them, and they'll make a nice profit from doing that type of research. So what we say, and the Balei Tosafot define Dror de Mamona over here, they mention it. They don't call it that, but over here they're saying the same thing differently than Rashi says over there. The way that Balei Tosafot explained Dror de Mamona is that the Safek exists even without the claims of the claimants or the litigants over here, meaning that the scenario itself is b'safek irrespective of the claims of the parties here. So for instance, in the cases of our Mishnah, where you have Shvarim that are chasing after other Shvarim, we don't know in the end what really happened. We have no idea. If you came to Beit Din without the litigants and ask us what should be the outcome of this case, Beit Din would be in a safek now as well, because they don't know which shore damaged which shore or how this whole thing played out, because we have no witnesses to that. So now when the claimants come along and make their claim and say it was this way, or the other claimant said it was this way, they're not in any way enhancing the safek. The safek exists even without their claims. That's what Tosafot calls Dror de Mamona. And that's the only case where Sumcha says that Mamona Mutabam Safek is Chokim. Rashi, on the other hand, in Bava Metzia explains that Dror de Mamona is when it involves Chisaron Kis, when it involves a monetary loss in the scenario, that's called Dror de Mamona. The Balei Tosafot over there in Bava Metzia disagree with Rashi and show why they think he's wrong. But nevertheless, when we get to that case in Bava Metzia, we'll discuss it more in depth. But that is a qualification of this statement of Sumchus, so that doesn't apply in every case of Safek. So now, Sumchus is of that position that in all these scenarios, in our Mishnah, you would end up splitting the difference, or splitting the claim here. Whereas according to the Chachamim, it's HaMotzi Mechavero Olav HaRaya. And that's what we're saying here, that the Mishnah is arguing on Sumchus. So Amalei Rabbi Ava Bar Mamal Rabbi Chir Ba'ava, Amar Sumchus Afilu Bari Ubari. Did Sumchus say that even though both litigants are making a definitive claim, that he still says that's called a Mamona Mutalba Safek and Chokim, even though both parties are making a definitive claim, Amalei'in? He says yes. Amar Sumchus Afilu Bari Ubari. Even in a case where both parties are making a definitive claim, nevertheless, we say that that's a Mamona Mutalba Safek and Chokim. So now, what that says, or what that implies, is that the Chachamim disagree with Sumchus in that case as well, and that means that our Mishnah must be talking about a case of Bari Ubari. That even in a case where both are making a definitive claim, nevertheless, the Mishnah says, Amotzi Mechavero Olav HaRaya, and the Chachamim do not agree with Sumchus in that case. And how do I know that? How do I know that our Mishnah is talking about a case where they both have definitive claims? How do I know that that's the scenario in a Mishnah? The answer is Diktoni, because the Mishnah says, Zilmer Shorcha Hezik, the individual who is the owner of the victimized shore says, it was your shore that did the damage to my shore, Vizilmer. And the owner of the bullying shore, the one that did the damage, says, Lo, Ki. No, it's not that way, it's this way. So the statement that you hear out of them is that they're making a definitive claim. He's not saying maybe it was this way. He's saying, no, what you're saying is wrong. The scenario was exactly the opposite. It was the scenario. So you see, both of them making definitive claims. And in making definitive claims, it means that our Mishnah says that in that case, Amotzi Mechavero Alav HaRaya, which argues on Sumchus, who in that scenario would say, it's a Mamona Mutalba Safek is Chokim. Matki Fla Rav Papa. Rav Papa says, that's a very difficult explanation of our Mishnah. Midibereshu Bari Ubari. If the first scenario in our Mishnah is talking about a case of Bari and Bari, Seifanami Bari Ubari. That means that the latter cases in the Mishnah are also talking about where we have definitive claims. Ema Seifa. Let's look at the Seifa. That doesn't seem so true. Haya Echad Gadol Vechad Katan. One of them was big and one of them was small. Nizak Omer Gadol Izik, the injured party, the one who owns the shore that was injured, said it was the larger of the two animals that did the damage. And the other hand, the owner of the Shvarim that were doing the bullying says it was the smaller shore that did the damage. Echad tam vechad muad. One of them was a tam, one of them was muad. And Isaac Omer muad ezik. The owner of the victimized shore says it was the muad that did the damage, so I'm entitled to full compensation. But Mazik Omer, the owner of the shore that did the damage, says, lo, kielatam ezik. It was the more domesticated animal that did the damage. I don't have to pay you chatzi nezek. Hamotzi mechavero lavaraya. In all these instances, we say that the burden of proof is the one trying to extract capital. Halo mighty raya. What would happen if he doesn't bring any proof? Shokil kedaber mazik. Then we would assume that he gets whatever the mazik says. Meaning that you have two claims over here. You have the claim of the nizak who says it was the bigger animal that did it, or the muad that did it. And then you have the mazik saying, no, it was the smaller animal that did it, or the tam that did it. So let's talk about the case of muad and tam. It's just easier to explain. The one who's the owner of the victim, I sure, says you owe me 100% of the damage. The mazik says, no, I only owe you 50% because it was the tam. So we say the burden of proof is on the owner of the victim, I sure, to prove that he's entitled to the additional 50%. But if he doesn't bring that proof, he's still entitled to the 50% that the mazik admits to. The mazik admits he's chayav that 50%. So now, if you say they both made definitive claims, and that is the case, I mean, this is the outcome, is that he gets the minimum of what the mazik admitted to, and if he brings proof, he'll get what he made his claim about. Maybe David Yufto, the Rabba Bar Natan. That would be a strong refutation of the position of Rabba Bar Natan. Da'amar, Tanochitim, Vodolo Besorim. If a person comes along and makes a claim and says, you owe me chitim. The other guy says, I don't owe you any chitim, but I do owe you sorim, patur. He doesn't have to pay him anything because by the mere fact that he made a claim for chitim, in essence, he basically says, I have no claim for sorim. So even though the defendant says, I owe you sorim and not chitim, the claimant that is saying that it was chitim is saying chitim and not sorim. And so what Rabba Bar Natan says is that the claimant here gets nothing. He doesn't get the chitim because we have no admission from the defendant. He doesn't get the sorim because even though the defendant admitted to that, the claimant never asked for that. He's by saying that it's chitim, that it's not sorim, that is my claim. Since you're making a definitive claim about one item, it's as if you're admitting that you have no claim on the other item. That's one approach. Rashi and Tosafot seem to indicate by the mere fact that you make a claim on one item is as if you're forgiving the other item or you're being mochel on the claim on the other item. And that's why you have no entitlement to what the defendant admits to. Whereas the Ramah explains over here that the admission is not meaningful because his admission is almost like he's laughing at the other individual and saying, you're asking me for chitim? I owe you sorim. And he's not really giving a serious answer. He's just poking fun of him because he's saying, you have a claim for something that I don't owe you at all, or I have nothing to do with you. And therefore, we don't take seriously his admission that he owes Seorim. Well, then, in our scenario over here, that would imply that when the Nizak says it was the Mu'ad that did the damage, that means the Mu'ad and not the Tam. And when the defendant comes along, or the owner of the Shtor that did the damage comes along and said it was a Tam, his admission should not obligate him to pay the Chatzin Nezek. He should have to pay nothing, according to the way Rabba Bar Natan says. Yet, what we're suggesting now is that they both made definitive claims, and we're giving him the minimum of what the mazik admitted to. Ella, it must be that the latter scenarios in the Mishnah are a case of bori v'shema. That is a case where one litigant is making a definitive claim, and the other one is saying an uncertain claim, or making an uncertain claim. Tosfot points out over here that the bori and shema that we're speaking about here in the Mishnah is different than the case of bori and shema other places in Shas, where we say that bori trumps the shema, and we believe the person who makes the bari or the definitive claim. Tosfot says that's only in a scenario where there's already circumstantial evidence which would indicate that both parties should know the information, and one of them is saying, I don't know. It's a scenario where the one who's making the claim or the definitive claim makes it in the face of the other party who knows whether he's telling the truth or not. And the defendant in that case was present and should know the information. And the fact that he says, I don't know, weakens his claim. So in that case, we have a bari and shema. We will favor the party who says bari, and we will decide the case in his favor. On the other hand, in our scenario, our case over here, the definitive claim and the shema claim are really not very much different. Because the one who says, I know for sure the scenario is this way, we have no more evidence that that was the case than the alternative. And the guy who says shema says, I don't know. The truth is he might not know because nobody was present or he wasn't present there when the incident happened. And therefore, just because there's a bari claim and a shema claim, we're not going to say that the bari, the definitive claim, trumps the uncertain claim over here, because the nature of the bari and shema over here are very different. We're talking about a case of uncertainty over here. And therefore, that weakens the bari claim, the definitive claim, and also makes the shema claim not so far-fetched. On the other hand, if you have a scenario where the bari claim is there really a definitive claim where he could know, and even the defendant should know, that his bari is a stronger definitive claim, and the shema claim actually weakens the position of the defendant. And in that case, we'll say bari trumps shema. But that's only in that scenario, not in our case over here, and that's why over here we don't say bari trumps shema automatically. The kamar bari man, who is the one that makes the definitive claim? The kamar shema man, who is the one that's making the uncertain claim over here? Ine ma, if you'd say it's a case, the kamar nizak bari, it's where the injured party is making the definitive claim. The kamar mazik shema, and the mazik is making the uncertain claim. Akati, let me te avi tiufta, the rabba ranotan. That scenario would still be a problem for Rabba Bar Natan, because over there, the damaged party is making a definitive claim, and so he's certain about what he's asking for. The other party is admitting partially, because he's saying, I don't know, maybe you're right, maybe you're not right. And yet we give him the minimum, even though he's making a definitive claim and saying that's this and not anything else. So that would be against Rabba Bar Natan. Ella, the scenario here in that part of the Mishnah be, the Kamar Nizak Shema. The case where the victim, I sure said, maybe it was the Muad that did the damage. Maybe it was the town that did the damage. But Kamar Mazik and the owner of the Shvarim that did the damage comes along and makes a Bari claim and says, no, it was the Tom that did it. So that's different than the scenario of Rabba Bar Natan. Because Rabba Natan's din only applies where the claimant is making a definitive claim. Because in his making of the definitive claim, he is saying, this is my claim and nothing else. And so therefore he's not entitled to the Sorim when he makes a claim of Chitim. Over here, in the scenario where the claimant is saying Shema, maybe it was the Moad, maybe it was the Tam, that means that he's opening up the possibility that it was either of them. Then when the Mazik admits and says, for sure it was the Tam, he should be entitled to at least get the payment of the Tam, because he made a claim that included both the Moad and the Tam. That's different than the case of Rabba Bar Natan. And therefore our Mishnah would no longer be a question of Rabba Bar Natan. It says, de seifa nizak shema umazik bari. If this next case in the Mishnah is a case where the damaged party is making an uncertain claim and the party that did the damage is making a certain claim, reishanami, the first case in the Mishnah should also be a case of nizak shema umazik bari. And that's the case from Ramar Sumchus afilu beha de itzduch v'ashmeinon, the law. You're telling me that in that case, Sumchus still believes that it's mamona mutab safek and chokim, that you have to tell us that the Chachamim disagree with that. In a case where the claimant is making an uncertain claim, definitely there, Sumchus is not going to say it's Mamona Mutar B'Safek V'Chokim. That you have to teach us that the Chachamim disagree with the Sumchus's position in that case. Sumchus, of course, agrees with the Chachamim in that case. You don't need to tell us that the Chachamim disagree, because Sumchus himself would not have his position in that scenario. It says, lo, seifa nizak shema umazik bari. That second case, the case of the Muad and the Tam, or the Gadol and the Katan, is a case where the nizak is making an uncertain claim, and the mazik is making a definitive claim in order not to be a problem for Rabba Bar Natan. Reisha nizak bari umazik shema. The reisha is just the opposite case. It's the case where the nizak is making a bari claim, and the mazik is making a shema claim that the damaged party is making a definitive claim, and the party that is the owner of the animals that did the damage is making an uncertain claim. To tell us that in that case, Sumchus says that it's Mamona Mutalba Safek and Chokim, the Chachamim still disagree in that case and say it's a Motzi Mechavero Alav Haraya. And even though, as the Bali Atosfo point out, saying that the ratio is a case of Nizak Bari Umazik Shema does not fit into Lashon, as we proved before, that the Lashon really sounds like it's Bari Ubari, what the Bali Tosafot say is that it's both. The Mishnah in that ratio, that first scenario, says that this is the din, whether it's a case of Bari Ubari, or whether it's a case where the Nizak is making, the claimant is making a definitive claim, and the defendant is making an uncertain claim. In both of those scenarios, the Chachamim would say, it's a Motzi Mechavero Alav Araya. And Sumchus will agree in a case where you have Bari Ubari, where they're both making definitive claims, but Papa says Sumchus will agree with the Chachamim that it's a Motzi Mechavero Alav Araya. Bahalo Dami Reish of the Seifa, why does that solve a problem? You still have a inconsistency between the Reish and the Seifa. So, Amrei, Bari Ushema, Shemu Bari, Chad Miltahi. When you say a scenario where one has a claim that's Bari and one has a claim that is Shema, that's the same as saying one has a Shema and one has a Bari. We don't really worry about the order or who has the Bari claim and who has the Shema claim. We have scenarios where one party, whether it's the claimant or the defendant, is making a Bari claim and the other one's making a Shema claim. Happens to be in the Reisha that the scenario is a case where the Nizak, the injured party, is making the Bari claim, and the Mazik is making the Shema claim. And then the next case of the Mishnah is just the opposite. that the Nizak is making the Shema claim and the Mazik is making the Bari claim. So the Badad at least is a similar nature. But Bari Ubari, Shema Ubari, Trey Milan Inhu. But we're talking about if the first scenario is a case where they're both making definitive claims, and the second scenario is a case where one of them is making Bari and one's making a Shema, those aren't similar cases, or that's not a similar structure to the Mishnah, and therefore I'm unwilling to accept that type of explanation. The Mishnah, if the Mishnah is talking about a case of Bari and Bari. And for that reason, Rav Papa believes that the Mishnah is made up of cases of Bari and Shema and Bari. Each one of them, too, get to us to an outcome that doesn't cause us problems or upend what we otherwise thought should be the halacha. In the case of, in the second scenario in the Mishnah, about the Gadol, the Katan, the Tam, and the Muad, there it's done with a case where the claim is a Shema, so it doesn't cause a problem for Rabba Bar Natan. And the case of the Reish of the Mishnah is a case where it's a Bari claimant and a Shema for the defendant, in order that we can't prove anything about the Shita of Sumchus. So according to Rabbi Yechir Bava, in the end, Sumchus is Choleik on the Chachamim, not only in the case of the claimant making a definitive claim and the defendant making an uncertain claim, but even in the case of Bari Ubari, even in the case where both parties make a definitive claim, he still argues on the Chachamim and says it's Amona Mutal B'Safek, and therefore Chokim. On the other hand, Rav Papa believes that in the case where the claimant is making a definitive claim and the defendant makes an uncertain claim, there he says that Mamona Mutaba Safek is Chokim because of the imbalance between the two parties, which is the claimant has a stronger claim now because he's making a definitive claim. The defendant has on his side the fact that he's Muchzak in the item. Those two, in a sense, wipe each other out. And you're back to a stalemate, and therefore we say Mamona Mutaba Safek is Chokim. But in a case where you have Bari Ubari, where they're both making definitive claims, there, Rav Papa says, Sumchus will agree with the Chachamim that it's a Motzimi Chaveiro Alav Areya. Because they're both making definitive claims, that means that neither of their claim is better than the other. The only thing we're left with now is the Muchzak. That the Muchzak has greater believability, or Nemanut, or an upper hand in the case. And therefore, it's a Motzim Mechaveir Olav Araya, and Sumchus will agree in that case that it's a Motzim Mechaveir Olav Araya. And that is the machloket here between Rav Papa and Rav Chir Ba'aba. Rav Chir Ba'aba is saying that Sumchus says his din even by Bari Ubari, whereas Rav Papa says that Sumchus only says his din by Bari and Shema, not by a case of Bari Ubari. The guy says, Gufa. Amar Rabba Bar Natan, Tanu Chitim Ve'odolo B'sorim Patur. A case where he makes a claim for Chitim, and the defendant admits to Sorim, he doesn't have to pay anything. Maika Mashmalon, Tanina. What is he teaching us that we don't know already from a Mishnah? Tanu Chitim, Ve'odolo B'Sorim. The Mishnah says in Shmuot that a person makes a claim for Chitim, and the other party admits to Sorim, Patur. So it's explicit Mishnah. What do I need Rabbi Bar Natan to teach me? This Mishnah is a Mishnah in Shvuot that is talking about the modeh b'mitzat as to whether you're chayav eshuav modeh b'mitzat. So here the Mishnah says, Tanu chitim odolo v'surim patur means patur from the shvuah. There is a machloket over there, and there's a dissenting opinion that says you are chayav from modeh b'mitzat in that case. Nevertheless, the Bali HaTosafot see over here that according to both opinions, even if you say chayav b'shvuah, patur b'shvuah, both of them agree that you're patur mitashlumim, that you do not have to make compensation or payment based on the defendant's admission. And that's what the Bali HaTosafot say over here, that Rabbi Natan Amran Lemiltei Kukuli Alma Velo Mechayev Rabbi Gamil El Shvuah. Rabbi Gamil over there says that you are chayav for Shvuah Modeh Mitzat, only believes you're chayav for the Shvuah. For the regards to the monetary payments, he would agree to what Rabbi Bar Natan says over here, which is that there is no monetary payment, that there's not enough admission to make you chayav based on the defendant's admission. And that's based on a machloket about the Gzeir Taktuv, whether you need a minhata'ana to be chayav for modeh b'mitzat. Whereas by the monetary obligations of the Bali HaTosafot we mentioned before, said that's as if you forgave the other claim. And that's why you will not get any monetary compensation, even according to Rabban Gamliel. Imi hotam, had I only had that Mishnah, Hava mina patur min d'mei chitim, v'chayav b'd'mei se'orim. When he said patur, patur means that he doesn't have to pay for the chitim. That still means that he's chayav for the se'orim. Kamash malon, that the patur, the gamre, it's none. When it says patur, it means the gamre, you're totally patur over there. He's telling us that the patur of the Mishnah means patur the gamre. It's not. Hayu ha-nizakim shnayim, echad gadol ve-echad katan. Now the Gemara moves on to the next section of the Mishnah, where we have two shvarim that injured two other shvarim. Again, there the nizak says it was the big one that damaged the big animal, and the small one damaged the small animal, and the mazik says just the opposite. Ha lo maiti raya shakil. The Amar mazik. Over there it says, amotzi mechareo alav raya. And over there we say that even if he doesn't bring a proof, it sounds like he gets what the mazik says. Then at minimum, he gets whatever the mazik admitted to. Amai, why isn't that a case of chitim v'sorim ninu? So the Gemara says, no. Rayu litol ve'ein lo. If he has a raya, he will get. But if he doesn't have a raya, ein lo, he gets nothing. So now, here in the Mishnah, now we have two scenarios in which the Gemara now is saying that they're both teaching us the same thing. They're teaching us that in both instances, your patur, the gamra, you don't even get what the mazik says. Va'atanya, don't we have a brayta that says, Hare ze mishtalem ala katan, mina gadol, ala gadol mina katan. So in that case, it sounds like the brayta is telling us in the Mishnah, you get what the mazik said, at least at minimum. That you pay for the gadol out of the katan, and you pay for the katan out of the gadol. But it says, ditafas. It was a case where he grabbed them or confiscated them. Meaning that the nizak, before he went to Beit Din, grabbed the larger shor as compensation for the larger shore that is damaged. So even though in a case he went to Beit Din, we wouldn't give him that compensation. We wouldn't give him any compensation whatsoever because his claim is a definitive claim. And on the other side, we have someone else who's saying, no, that's not the case. And because of Rabbi Bar Natan, we were going to say that you get nothing in this scenario. Nevertheless, if he grabs the animal, Beit Din in that case, the motzi mechamiro v'lav haraya now flips. And the burden of proof now is on the individual, the mazik, to get his animal back in that scenario. So that's the chiddush of this part of the Mishnah, is that if he is tofes, he gets to keep whatever he is tofes, because now we flip the burden of proof in the other direction. It's not. Haya echad tam ve'echad muad. It's a scenario where one of them is a tam, one of them is a muad. Anizak omer muad ezik et agadol, v'tam et akatan. Mazik omer lo, ki el atam et agadol, muad et akatan. Hamutzi mechavero, alav haraya. Once again, the burden of proof is on the one, on the nizak, who's trying to say that he's getting full compensation for the gadol, and chatzinezek for the katan. Halo mighty rayo. Again, if he doesn't make a proof, what it sounds like from a Mishnah is, shaka gadamer mazik, he would get what the mazik says. Vamai, why is that true? Chitin visorininu. Again, that goes against Rabba Bar Natan. Mar again answers the same thing, ra'oi lito ve'enlo. Even though he's ra'oi to take it, he won't get it because he made a definitive claim that argues on the claim of the mazik. Va'atanyo, don't we have a brayta that says, harizem mishtalim lekatan mina muad ulegadol mina tam, that it sounds like you do pay based on what the mazik said? Gemara again says, ditafas. It's a case where he grabbed it. Again, there was a tfisa over here, and that's what the chiddush of the Mishnah is. So now we actually have four scenarios in the Mishnah, which the Gemara just discussed. And in each of those scenarios, the Balei Tosafot point out for us that there is a chiddush in each one of these sections. And so, if you look at the Tosafot on the top of Lamed Vav Amud Aleph, he says, Perush ro'oi luto im tafas. He is ro'oi to take it if he grabs it. Ve'ein lo im lo tafas. And he gets nothing if he doesn't take it. That's what the meaning of ro'oi luto ve'ein lo is. Whereas Rashi and the other Rishonim say that the meaning is, or the explanation of ro'oi over here means, that you should have been able to take it had you simply brought proof. If you don't bring proof, ain't no, you get nothing at all. It's only in a scenario where he has a claim against both of the shvarim. Im tafas mishtalein. Then in that case where he grabs it, he gets paid out. In a case where he has a claim against the gadol, afilu tafas hakatan ein mishtalein minei. If he grabs the katan, he doesn't get paid out of it because over there, he only has the claim against one of two animals and we're uncertain as to which of those two animals. In that scenario, you can't beat the face. That won't help you out. So Tosfot says that the tfis over here only helps when he has a tviya on both of the shvarim. Rashi over here himself says that's not the case. The tfisa helps even in a case where there's a claim on one of the two shvarim. And most of the Rishonim agree with that shita of Rashi, as the Gra points out over here, that even in a scenario where he has only claim on one of the shvarim, if he's tofes, then it shifts the burden of proof onto the mazik away from the nizak. And then Tosfot says over here, Why doesn't the Gemara give the same answer it gave before? The Gemara nizak shema umazig bari. Before we solved the problem in the Mishnah of saying that it's not a problem for Rabbi Bar Nathan by simply saying that the claimant is only making an uncertain claim. Why don't we say in the next two scenarios the same answer that it was an uncertain claim? If that's the scenario, then you'd have a problem that the Mishnah is telling you the same thing three times over. Could it perish bekuchus? Like Rashi explained, that that's why you can't give this answer, because otherwise you'd have the same answer being given each time, and there'd be no new chiddush in the Mishnah. And for that reason, now it's necessary to bring down all the sections of our Mishnah. The Reisha Ashmeinon, the first case in the Mishnah teaches us, Afilu Mazik Shema V'Nizak Bari, that even in a case where the Mazik is an uncertain claim, and the Nizak is making a definitive claim, Pligi Rabbanan Alei De Sumchus. The Rabbanan still argue on Sumchus and say, Motzi Mechavero Alav Ayaraya, don't say it's a Mamon and Matal, but Safek and Chokim. V'hau De Katanu Gadol, the second case of the Mishnah, Mashmi'inan, Afilu Nizak Shema U'Mazik Bari, that even in a scenario where the Nizak has an uncertain claim, and the Mazik has a definitive claim, Polik Sumchus. Sumchus argues in that case. So, in the first scenario of the Mishnah, it tells us the Chiddush that the Rabbanan argue over there and say that it's still Motzi Mechaveru of Araya, even though the Nizak is making a Bari claim, and the Mazik is making a Shema claim, an uncertain claim. That makes it like a scenario where he should be splitting the money. Nevertheless, the Chachamim say, even though it's a Bari versus a Shema, nevertheless, you still have Motzi Mechaveru Alav Araya. In the second scenario, it's the opposite way around, where the claimant is making an uncertain claim, and the defendant is making a certain claim, over there you would thought Sumchus would agree with Chachamim that a Motzi Mechaveru Alav Araya. That comes to teach us that Sumchus argues in that case, and still says that you split it. So those are the first two cases the Mishnah teaching that had Chiddush, that the Chachamim's position of Motzi Mechaveru Alav Araya even applies by cases where the claimant is making a definitive claim and the defendant is making an uncertain claim. And the second case comes to teach us that, just the opposite, that Sumchus says you still split it, even in a scenario where the claimant is making an uncertain claim and the defendant is making a certain claim, even there Sumchus says that it's Mamon Mutal B'Safek V'Chokin. The third case in the Mishnah comes to teach us, Shminan Da'afilu L'Rabbi Acha, even according to Rabbi Acha, that says in the Mishnah in Baba Batra, that if you have a Gamal Ocher Ben Agmalim, if you have this wild camel amongst other camels, then you know that that wild camel is the one that killed the dead animal that's laying on the floor. Nevertheless, that over here we don't say for certain it is the Muad, because both of them were running. Meaning that in the scenario that Rabbi Nathan lays out in the Mishnah of Baba Batra, you have one camel that's wild, and then you have a dead animal on the floor. So now we have a whole herd of camels, and we're trying to determine which one did it. The overwhelming evidence, or the circumstantial evidence, is that the one that's wild and running around like crazy is the one that killed the animal. Never Rabbi Nathan says that's the animal that we're going to deem as the animal that killed. Nevertheless, in our scenario, even though you could say the same thing, I have a Mu'ad and a Tam. If I have to choose between which one did the damage over here, was it the Mu'ad or the Tam, I'm more likely to finger the Mu'ad, because he's one who's already gored three times. Nevertheless, over here, Rabbi Nathan will agree and say that that's not the scenario, because both the Mu'ad and Tam were chasing the other animal. So we know that they were both involved. And so there, for that reason, there's no more evidence or reason to believe that the Mu'ad did the damage or killed here versus the Tam. V'ach danizakin shnaim ashmoina. The next scenario in the Mishnah comes to teach us this chiddush, the nitpas shakil, that if you're tofes, then that tfisa works. So in the scenario of the echad gadol v'echad katan, if you're tofes in that case, it works, because over here that it's a stalemate. We know both animals are involved in the damage, and therefore if he grabs the gadol, he flips the burden of proof on the mazik now by grabbing it. The seifa, what about the last case, which is the tam and the mu'ad case? That does what says there's no chiddush there, but Aidi the Ari Baba the El Begadol Katan Vitam Muad. But since in the previous cases in the Mishnah it dealt with the scenario of Gadol Katan, Tam and Muad, when there was only one shore that was injured by one of those parties, in the Sefer of the Mishnah it brings you when there are two injuring two, It brings you a similar scenario of a gadol and katan injuring a gadol and katan, and a tam and muad injuring the two shvarim, a gadol and katan over there, in order to have parallel structure in the Mishnah, but there is no chiddush in that last scenario of the Mishnah. Okay, with that, we're going to stop here by the two dots on the top of Lamed Vav, Amud Aleph.